You're invited to travel the world and discover what it means to live the intercontinental life. With more than 200 properties worldwide, Intercontinental Hotels and Resorts welcomes you to iconic properties in global destinations including New York, London, and Shanghai. Discover more about these cities and the tales they inspire with Stories of the Intercontinental Life, a collection of stories that will excite your curiosity and offer new perspectives on the world. Hear more at intercontinental.com/life.
Here's your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Having mutual funds in your portfolio can help you achieve diversity, but there is such a thing as owning too many funds. We'll find out why in a moment. First, some money and market news you should know. Those credit cards were busy in July. The Federal Reserve says that consumer borrowing rose at the fastest rate in almost 2 years, increasing by $23.3 billion. That's an annual growth rate of 6.8%. Economists had been expecting a $16 billion gain. Now, credit card use jumped 11.2% in July. That's the highest rate in 20 months. And non-revolving credit, which includes things like auto and student loans, but not mortgages, rose 5.3%. And the ease of working remotely has given lots of people the ability to pick up and leave big cities for smaller areas. And while for workers, hearing birds chirping rather than car horns honking sounds attractive, it's putting unexpected pressure on small cities. Now, data from the website LinkedIn, reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, shows that workers are leaving places like New York City and moving to Charlotte, North Carolina, and Orlando, Florida, and leaving Chicago for Nashville, Tennessee, and Indianapolis. They're also leaving Los Angeles for Las Vegas, San Francisco, and Reno, Nevada. The Journal's Ben Eisen reports that one downside is that many places are dealing with growing pains like fast-rising home prices and traffic congestion while workers are moving there, but they're not enjoying all the economic benefits that larger cities see, such as the deep investments companies often make in the areas where they're based. Plus, economists say that workers tend to spread out geographically during an economic cycle's later stages, and that raises questions about how these cities will fare in a downturn. And workers are usually more confident about moving when the economy is strong and their employers are more lenient.
You're invited to travel the world and discover what it means to live the intercontinental life. With more than 200 properties worldwide, Intercontinental Hotels and Resorts welcomes you to iconic properties in global destinations including New York, London, and Shanghai. Discover more about these cities and the tales they inspire with Stories of the Intercontinental Life, a collection of stories that will excite your curiosity and offer new perspectives on the world. Hear more at intercontinental.com/life.
For investors, a good rule of thumb is to have a diversified portfolio, and stocking your holdings with mutual funds and ETFs is often seen as a good way to reach that goal. But how many funds in your portfolio is too many? Let's bring in Wall Street Journal contributor Dan Weil with some answers. So Dan, mutual funds and ETFs provide a good variety of holdings, but financial experts say find the balance between having diversity and getting socked with too many fees.
That's true, JR. If you have more than, say, 5 to 10 funds, a lot of them could have high fees if you're using actively managed mutual funds. And even if you're using passive ETFs, if you're buying enough of them, and especially if you're trading in and out of them, the fees will mount.
And those fees can oftentimes depend on whether somebody owns actively or passively managed funds.
Right. If you're using passively managed funds, the fees won't be as big an issue, especially if you're just buying and holding. Then it's really not an issue. Then the issue becomes more that you're duplicating your holdings. But for actively managed funds, they can be quite expensive, especially the top performing ones tend to be more expensive. So the fees do add up.
So it's really a good idea to do some homework on your funds before you jump in and buy them.
Exactly. That's always the case. Anytime you're going to make an investment of any kind, you want to do as much research as possible.
You know, also investors should get out of the habit of feeling secure based on the number of funds they own. As you point out in your column in the Journal, it's asset allocation that should be the main thought.
That's a good point, JR, because if you don't have diversification, if, say, you have 20 funds that are all in large cap stocks, well, if that segment of the stock market falls precipitously, you won't have the benefit of diversification in other areas, say, small cap or mid cap stocks, or particularly bonds, that could be better at the same time that large cap stocks are falling.
And it's a good idea to see if you have too many large cap funds. That's not a good idea. But it's also seems like it's wise for an investor to look at the holdings of each of those funds so they don't have too much duplication in terms of how those funds invest in the market.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you have, say, an ETF that mimics the S&P 500, and then you go into some actively managed large cap stock funds, a lot of the holdings of those funds, the actively managed funds, could repeat the holdings you have in your S&P 500 ETF. So you really aren't getting any diversification benefits at the same time that you're paying the fees of the actively managed funds.
And then in terms of finding the information about your funds or your ETFs, that's pretty readily available, isn't it?
Yeah, the funds themselves have a lot of information. I use Morningstar myself for the premium version. You have to pay for it. So it can cost a little money, although I find that it's worth it in my case. But even if you don't pay for something, there's a lot you can get from the fund itself. And if you do a Google search, you'll often find some free analysis of funds.
And in your story, you mentioned that especially for older investors, it's a good idea to keep your fund's portfolio manageable in case a spouse winds up inheriting it.
Yeah, that's a very good point, JR, because if you die, then probably your holdings are going to go to your spouse. And if your spouse isn't someone who enjoys following the market, but there are 20 funds suddenly in the spouse's control, that can be a difficult situation at a difficult time.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal contributor Dan Weil joining us on the line. Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
Sure. Thank you, JR.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm JR Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.